I have to consent. I've consented. Oh boy.
Here we go, Mary.
Oh, we're back.
It's season four of the Melrose Place cast, everybody.
Oh my God, are we gonna get sued?
No, this is a parody podcast, so we're not going to get sued. And as a reminder to everybody, going into season four, if you're still with us, this is not a parody. I'm sorry, not a recap podcast. It is a parody podcast.
Yeah. What are we parodying?
Anything that would get us sued.
Okay, great. Okay. So season four. Oh my God, I just can't wait to get started. I mean, we left with such a cliffhanger.
The actual bombing.
Is there a bombing? I don't know yet.
There was a bombing, Mary. We saw Kimberly press the button.
Well, I didn't see anything explode.
And yes, we did, because as we determined, the Lifetime movie of Melrose Place was canon. You saw the bombing. Kimberly is floating in the pool.
Oh boy.
So that's official. And you know what else I'm so excited about? Darren Star. Thank God he's gone and off to
Oh,
Jersey or wherever.
wherever he went.
You know, like out by where Sully landed that airplane.
Oh, those geese were a real problem.
They were a real problem. So with Darren's
Star.
Star? Darren Star. Did I say Darren Spelling?
You almost did. It
Darren
would rhyme with
Star,
Aaron spelling, so
out of
okay.
here. We got
90% of people wanting to stay.
we got a good 12 characters on the credit scene. That's more than there's ever been.
That's crazy. This intro is getting a little long. I think we should get started.
I got so lost. Anyway, season four of the Melrose Place cast begins right now.
Thank God.
Hello and welcome to the Melrose Place cast. Today we're talking about season four, episode 16, called Holy Strokes, which may be in poor taste. I'm Mary.
I'm teacher. Oh my God, I just realized the holy strokes. Oh my God. It is in poor taste. That is terrible. I thought this was a golf reference.
It's a fair guess when Dr. Peter Burns is around.
Oh my gosh. Well, let me tell you, can I give you something, Mary?
I hope you will.
Podcast news.
Oh, wow.
Yep. Well, as you know, first, Happy New Year.
Happiest of New Year's.
2024, the year our country finally decides what we're going to do about Donald Trump.
Boy, that'll be fun to
It's
figure
going
out.
to be great. And this episode, as you know, right, like it's January 1st, 2024 right now. I'm surprised, to be honest, I'm surprised I'm awake.
Well, you party pretty hardy.
But also, here's what's interesting. I noticed this last week. The episode we're watching dropped on January 1st, 1996.
Oh my God, we synced up with them.
We synced up, yeah. And last week we were watching the Christmas episode right during the holiday season. This will never happen again. So I hope you love it.
Appreciate the magic of the season, everyone.
Now, also the magic of the season. I don't like to malign anybody's character.
You would never.
I would never make wild accusations. But as our listeners know, Mary, you solved Puddle.
Yeah, I did.
Or so we thought.
Oh, Jesus, what now?
Okay, just hear me out. Hear me out. I'm not yet suggesting we reopen the case, but I think we cleared Christopher.
Yes.
And
He has been.
the solution you found to Puddle was from Olivier Jernel,
Yes.
operated by Sidney Andrews.
Yes.
But Sidney Andrews is a fictional character who's died multiple times.
Just like Jesus.
And
Holy strokes.
at the same time, we find that the only other person in America still actively using Olivier Jernel is Christopher. And the exonerating evidence is from a fake Olivier Jernel account. I smell a heist. But it's a new year. I'm turning over a new leaf. I'm not accusing anyone. Not suggesting. I'm just saying.
You're just saying. I think there are a number of users of the fine Levi Journal product. Otherwise, it wouldn't still be active. So it could be anyone. It could be anyone, including Sydney Andrews.
She's dead multiple times. And
that's never stopped anyone on this show before.
And again, yes, there are multiple users of Levi Journal. Only one who's been credibly accused of kidnapping Cuddle for over 2 years. I'm just saying. But you know what? I give up. I will never mention Puddle again. I have my word as a Biden.
Oh, God.
Did you have any news for us, Mary?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, let's get started.
Should I? Haven't I brought enough news recently?
Maybe. But can I give you a quote of high art for the generations worthy of literary praise?
I think regardless of what I say, you're going to do it. So go for it.
I'm starting gay, Mary. Starting gay.
Oh, wow.
First of all, whore, we learned Matt's boyfriend's name.
Yeah, we did in a weird way.
And I can confirm from listening to the other podcasts, they did not name this character before this episode.
Well, I'm glad to have that confirmed because yeah. I was pretty sure I was right about it.
Yeah, his name is Alan. Alan?
Alan. Alan.
Alan. Yeah, Alan.
Yeah.
And the high art for the generations worthy of literary praise is at the end of the storyline, Alan saying, "You don't know how much I was hoping you'd ask," which seems like an odd phrase for me to pull out, doesn't it, Mary?
It is a little oddly constructed.
Now, yeah. It's most certainly not because I forgot to pick my quotes before we began recording.
No, you would never.
And it's certainly not because I was like, well, start gay, because then you can buy time to find the other two quotes. That's not it.
No.
But here's the part that I thought was higher for the generations worthy of literary praise. Okay, quick rundown. You know, again, this is not a recap podcast. We highly recommend pairing us with your rewatch.
Sure.
But just as a refresher, there was an adorable moment. Jake is there talking to Matt about Jane, whatever. And while Jake is there having coffee, Alan comes out with his shirt undone. And Jake gets so straight boy flustered and like practically drops his coffee on the desk. And he's like, oh, gee, look at the time. I got to go crush some pussy or something. Right? Like he was like, I'm out of here. There's gays everywhere.
There's too many now. I can only handle one at a time.
One at a time is fine. He's not my boyfriend, doctor. Anyway, Alan reveals they had a great night last night, but Alan reveals he's moving to New York City to get that good salsa.
Oh, my God.
No, is that wrong?
That's what they go there for.
Okay. He's moving to New York City to become an actor because his actress friend in New York City has room for him, Mary. You know what this means.
What?
They didn't name the actress.
Oh my God, is she on her way back?
Well, he's on her way to her for sure, right? It's got to be Sandy.
Had to be Sandy. Oh my God.
Yeah, just don't let her drive.
Is she still on the soap opera?
I don't know. What was that?
What was her character name on the soap opera she was on? It was great.
Oh, Dr. Aviva Lester.
That's what it was.
I am so disappointed in myself that I was able to pull that.
I'm proud of you for the first time in ages.
Oh, you and my mother. All right. Anyway, Matt was going to say something to Alan, but Alan interrupted with New York City. And so that's fine. But they're going to, you know, see each other. And then Matt's dropping him off at the airport, and Matt says, I'll go park the car and then I'll meet you at the gate. First of all, you dumb slut, if you were going to meet him at the gate, you would have parked the car and walked with him to the gate. Okay, so that's first of all. Second of all, what in the 1996 bullshit? Just walk up to the gate?
It was a different time.
Let me tell you, as a frequent flyer up in these streets of the airports, there's not enough space for the number of passengers that are going through these airports, much less friends, family, and other gays.
It was different then because you didn't have to get there like 4 hours early and sit around. You just showed up enough. 5 minutes before. Remember that? Was that season one when they went to that airport and Billy just parked? It was the only parking spot in front of the airport.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, Matt's going to take him to go to the meet him at the gate, and Alan says, "Nah, don't bother." Which, that's bullshit. That was stupid. Anyway, Alan says, "Just don't fall in love with anyone else, okay?" Because, you know, while he's gay, he's still a dude and expresses ownership over other people.
Well, you have to, you know?
Yep. And Matt calls his bluff as he's walking away and says, "Forget about New York and move in with me. We'll both have, this is our chance for both of us to have a real relationship." Pretty brutal stab at his previous partners, I will say. Also, pretty nasty thing for a married man with a child to say.
How old was little baby Doubtfire by now on the show? It's been, what, 2 years?
She's 12.
She's 40. So,
yeah, in Putin's Russia, she'd already be fighting in Ukraine. Yeah. I was listening to news podcasts today, Mary. It's dark. Things are bad.
Just don't listen. It's fine.
Anyway, Alan says, "You don't know how much I was hoping you'd ask." So the art in this, what Alan is gathering, right, is first, this is an artistic trope that gays have no hope at happiness, right? Like, and it's one in a million shots. Otherwise, they're just going to live this lonely, sad existence, going to wild canyon parties in the desert with Allison. Season one, Allison. City. Yeah. Or they're going to go to New York City, right? LA to New York. Those are your options.
New York City.
Yeah. Did you ever get some good New York City salsa?
That's the brand my family used to buy when we first started buying salsa. And let me mention, we bought what was called extra mild because we are white. It was basically tomato sauce. But it seemed spicy at the time.
You say at the time, like it's still not your preferred choice.
No, I'm up to the mild now.
Like, oh, an animal. Yeah, like animal.
I'm all getting right. The wild. Getting wild with my mild.
Okay. Well, anyway, the High Art for the Generations, it was playing on the trope that this is our only shot. We've been dating for 2 weeks now, right? Like we just last week heard Matt say two dates is regular for you. And in universe, before some dumb bitch of our listeners emails me and says one of two things, it's not Kelly Kapowski, or this episode aired 3 weeks later, so maybe it's longer. No. In universe, New Year's Eve happened in this episode.
Yeah.
And in this universe, last week was a Christmas Eve Christmas party at Bobby Parisi's house where Jane died.
Yeah, and she's still just waking up from her coma.
Yeah, she's just waking up. So listen. They've been dating for two dates plus 1 week. And now the trope of, it's such a lonely life. It's such a sad existence is what they're playing on. That's the high art. And Alan saying, "You don't know how much I was hoping you'd ask," is definitely this like, I don't want to say it, you say it, no, you say it, no, you say it, no, you say it. Like that I think is real, that like the hesitation that often is like, who's the first one to say I love you or whatever dumbass fucking thing the kids are doing these days. I hate Gen Z BT dubs. That's unrelated. Oh, they're stupid.
No, we're all stupid. Everyone's stupid. Newsflash. Every generation is stupid.
Well, this is what I got. This is my first shot. So, why don't you tell me if you saw any art in this episode while I quickly review my notes?
No, first I'd like to refute your point you just made that was a high art point.
You're pushing back on the gay.
I'm pushing back on the gay because, listen, contextually, sure, that might be an argument. This is ridiculous. Like, Matt is, look, is Matt a little desperate sometimes for companionship? Sure. He's pretty lonely on the show since Rhonda left. But, like, Matt, the Matt we have met, after like 2 weeks of dating a guy whose name we just literally learned in this episode. I mean, there are clearly already red flags. He knows that this guy is already like selling his things to pawn shops. He's not paying his bills. He's got like bill collect, like Matt Fielding, despite his many bad judgments, I don't think he would be like, hey, move in with me. I think he might. What would have been a more plausible storyline to me would have been Matt lending this guy some money. That would have made it would have also been a terrible idea, but I don't think Matt would ask him to move in this fast.
You know what? I'm going to give you credit. What I'm hearing you say is Matt is not a lesbian. Not that we're trafficking in lesbian stereotypes. I'm just saying he is not a lesbian.
He is not a lesbian.
Decidedly not. Although he is a gay married to a woman, right? So you can see how someone would make that mistake.
That's true. And he did let Russian Rhonda and Baby Doubtfire move in quickly, but that was a specific set of circumstances. Like, he hasn't asked the other boyfriends to move in who have been around a lot longer. So, you know what I'll give you? Here's an argument I would have accepted.
Okay.
Or easily. I think there could have been an argument made like, well, it's Christmas and he's feeling sad and he's feeling lonely and so he wants companionship. And so, let's be together and move in and we'll trim the tree and blah, blah, blah. Like, that even would have made more sense. But I don't believe, given the evidence shown in this episode or previously before we knew Alan's name, yes, I don't buy this storyline as of yet.
So, agree. Because here's what was missing. There had to have been a cut scene where it was revealed that Alan didn't have a place to stay in LA anymore.
Yeah.
Right? So it was either go to New York or he's going to need a new place to live here in LA. And then Matt would have come through with, okay, well, stay with me. But that's, you're right. With the evidence shown, that wasn't here. So,
and I think that's a great point you made. I could see that circumstance flying, but I do agree. Matt wouldn't say move in with me. He would just say, come stay with me while blank, like while you find a place or while you find a job. Like, but I don't think he'd say move in with me. I feel like that's a big step for Matt.
It's a big step. And listen, they're clearly setting up for the second half of season four. The end is in sight. I don't know how this season ends. I don't, but
it's,
all right. Okay, I withdraw the point. I give up. You win. I hope you're happy.
I am a little happy.
Good.
I am glad we got to learn his boyfriend's name.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
Good. I'm ovulating.
Mary, I understand this is an exciting moment, but try to stick with the podcast.
Wouldn't it be funny if women walked around doing that? That would actually, we should start. Like, hey,
I have to say, that was a disgusting line delivery. All I could just visualize is like shedding eggs. And as we've discussed on this podcast, I don't know how big those eggs are.
It's true. You do seem to have a very limited understanding of the whole thing.
But it was, oh my goodness.
It's a lot. All right. Billy and Brooke are out at lunch signing paperwork with her daddy's lawyer or somebody. And it's about transferring the inheritance funds from daddy to the baby upon its birth. Billy needs to go back to work, and Brooke kind of goes, what would happen if something happened to my pregnancy? Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, you know, you don't get anything. Your father's will is very specific. And she goes, And he goes, I know that look, because apparently he's met Brooke before. She's like, there was a mix-up at the lab. I'm not pregnant. I haven't told Billy yet. And she's like, what about the money? And he's like, I'd see about getting pregnant as fast as you can. Okay. Billy goes back to work, and he bumps into Allison after a meeting. He asks why she's been giving him the cold shoulder. I would like to remind us of what happened last week in the last, less than a week ago in the chronology of the show. He basically pulled her down the stairs by yanking on a box she was carrying. So that might be why it's a little frosty. Like, they did have like a full out argument and yelled at each other on the stairs. He didn't seem to remember that. So they're being weirdly nice to each other. And she's like, we're just living two different lives. Like the song goes, a couple of old acquaintances. And he goes, Ah, but as the song says, they shouldn't be forgotten. Like, this is cheesy shit. But she's nice, and she's like, sometimes the memory is too painful. Good night, Billy. Happy New Year. He has a very blank facial expression, as usual. He gets a phone call that Brooke is at the hospital. She seems upset. He goes and finds her in the lobby, and she says she had a miscarriage. The next morning, he stays home to take care of her, and she says, I want to get pregnant again right away. I read that.
Yeah, this was weird. There was so much I didn't like about this, and Billy is most of it.
That's fair. She heard that after a woman miscarries, she's more fertile. Something she was reading about breeding racehorses. What do you think? Billy is confused. He says, I was really looking forward to the baby, and don't we need kind of period to regroup and get our lives back together? She's like, isn't going on with our lives the best way to forget? Okay. Allison just has dropped it off a plant, and she says she's really sorry. Is there anything she can do? And Brooke's like, you brought the plant. You're off the hook. We're going to get again right away.
So now, let me tell you, I had that pegged as a high art point of like, oh, yeah, I mean, people do that. They're like, ah, here's some flowers. So I'm good. We're good. I was here.
She tells Allison to be a deer and just pass that around the building. There's no need for a big fuss. Billy walks Allison out. She asks how he's doing. And he's like, he says, I'm kind of a mess. I don't know how Brooke is okay. I just keep wondering, does this have something to do with the money? Yeah. They literally, again, to remind us, Allison and Billy just argued about that last week. She's like, that's more than I need to know. she tells him to take care. He thanks her for the millionth time. It's a weird ending to a scene. Later, he's on the couch looking at the teddy bear he bought the baby. Brooke calls him from the other room where she's in her lingerie, and she goes, I'm ovulating.
It was disgusting.
It really made you uncomfortable. He says he doesn't feel right about this. And she goes, no, the timing is perfect. It's tonight or it's another month. I just need that feeling again of a baby growing inside me.
Oh, God, that's disgusting.
You're really not into this. Billy's like, I really am not ready for this. And she pouts. She says, I'm sorry. I'm so damaged and unattractive that you don't want to sleep with me. He's like, is that that? And she goes,
it is that. It is that. She's right. This is where I'm pro Brooke, because that is it. When he said, the way he was like pouting, I was really looking forward to this baby. First of all, line delivery, awful. I don't know if you can blame the writing or just Andrew Shue, but that was terrible. And he is a bitch. Officially.
Billy is a bitch because he's not in the mood to get his wife pregnant again. Had a marriage yesterday.
First of all, it's not pregnant again. She was never pregnant. But second of all,
as far as Billy knows, she was at this point.
We don't judge how things work based on what Billy knows. Because that's dangerous.
But he doesn't. As far as Billy knows, she just had a miscarriage like yesterday.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, Billy's understanding is a miscarriage. But what I'm saying, and this is where I'm with Brooke, is he is treating her like she did something wrong.
I don't think so at all. And I normally would. No, I think Billy is having, as much as Andrew Shue can act, he's having an emotional reaction to the loss of the baby. I think that's what's going on. He's sad. He has sad panda feelings.
Well,
also,
there's only one feminist card between us, and now I think we see why.
Also, as a reminder, these two have not been having the greatest of relationships lately prior to this pregnancy. So, like, he might also just legit not be all that into her right now, and that's a valid reason to not want to have sex with someone, even if you're married.
All right. We both made our points.
Did we?
Yeah.
Anyway, she gets mad at him and shoves her. He shoves him out of the room, and she literally throws herself down on the bed to pout like a cartoon character. He leans against the door again with no facial expression. He bumps into her doctor later at the hospital. She says she's so sorry. It's so rare. And he's like, is a miscarriage rare? And she goes, oh, no, it was a mix-up at the lab. Billy's face finally gets an expression, kind of. It's sort of like shock, I guess. Cut to Shooters. He walks in and sees Brooke. He drags her into the alley by the dumpster.
Dumpster.
It's like he didn't act for like the last 3 or 4 episodes, and now he acted everything in one scene. All of the feelings are in one scene. And so he's like, you didn't even have a miscarriage. There was never a baby. You knew that I'd be upset. You figured, what the hell? I'll hurt him anyway. I'll hurt him so his heart will break. He won't even know. It's sick, Brooke. It's so sick. It makes you want to puke. And she's like, don't yell at me. And he's like, what am I supposed to do? Just keep taking it. I'm already a complete idiot for just standing around accepting all this. Fine, Brooke. Sure, Brooke. Anything you want, Brooke. I've had it. You know, I'm not just some tool to make you pregnant so you can get money. She's like, I don't even care about the money. And he goes, oh, you can stop lying. It's always about the money. Your mother's money, your father's money, now the trust fund money. You didn't even want a baby until there was money. And he's like, Billy, just listen. He goes, it's over. This marriage, this whole sham is over. And he stomps away. And then I guess, like, this is already, they could have just stopped there. And I would have been like, all right. He cuts up the next morning. Allison has gone to Palm Springs with Amanda and Peter to be like the fourth wheel while they say about. Allison looks out and Billy is in his car in front of this house. And the way they explain this is Amanda left a forwarding address
just on her voicemail. Yeah.
Who leaves an address on their voicemail? Like, that's not how the world works.
On New Year's Eve, it was New Year's Eve as evidenced by the fireworks.
So that made no sense. Allison's like, let me drive you back. Like, we can talk and blah, blah, blah. They get in the car and he jokes, fugitive from a bad marriage, the Billy Campbell story. Sounds like a TV movie of the week. And she's like, let's just go get breakfast. They get back to the building. This is the final scene of the episode. He goes into his apartment. The phone is off the hook and beeping. He goes looking for Brooke. And da-da-da, she's in the bathroom on the floor with cuts all over her arms and blood. Da-da-da!
Yeah. What do you think happens to Brooke?
I don't know. Do you think she's dead? I mean, don't think she's...
I know the answer, so I won't weigh in. I'm curious. Curious what you think.
I don't know. I feel like... I don't know.
No?
I don't think this will be it because I feel like they can squeeze a little more out of this. So I think there's more.
Okay. All right. She definitely is pale. I noted that.
Well, so am I though, you know.
Well, Mary, this is going to be so awkward because this is my second high art point for the generations.
Oh God.
Tucked right in this storyline.
All right.
I'll have you know that by using this, I am passing on. Now she'll just lie there limp. So that was also an opportunity for me, but I'm leaving that there.
I'm shocked.
The higher for the generations that I found that really jumped out to me was Brooke yell crying after she said, I'm ovulating. It's almost like she was calling to her people like, ladies, I'm ovulating, you know, because you all get in sync together.
Yeah, we all yell it too.
in a yodel way, like a kind of a yodel voice.
Yeah, you want to let everybody.
Yeah, it was close to yodeling the way she said it. That's the way to think about it.
Close to yodel.
I'm ovulating. Okay. Anyway, it's the part where at that scene when Billy was saying he doesn't want to have sex with her, where she was trying to, I think, make him feel guilty about it and try to, like, she was playing in this situation as she created it, even though it was not true, right? One of those situations where someone is either so convinced of their lie or just so committed to the lie that they act as though it's real, if that makes sense. But
yeah,
it's the line where she said, I lost your precious offspring and you just can't forgive me. That's the higher for the generations, because while I know it doesn't happen to be true in this one little instance, I think it's a very common reaction. And I understand we don't need to redebate it because I understand you read Billy differently, but that is what I was reading from him, that he was mad at her for having the miscarriage that he believed she had. Why else would he go talk to the doctor about the miscarriage?
He didn't go talk to the doctor. He bumped into the doctor at the hospital and he was visiting Jane.
He wasn't visiting Jane. Billy wasn't visiting Jane. Billy. So, okay, that was a weird setup. The way I read it was Billy came to talk to the doctor, but Michael is pushing Jane out. Sorry, doctor, you don't get to take your patients home. Especially if they landed in the hospital after being alone with you in a bedroom with a drugged drink. So that's first.
Fine.
Then Michael sees Kimberly and goes for a carefrontation and just leaves Jane stranded in the hallway.
Carefrontation.
And when he comes out, Billy is standing next to Jane for no reason. Now, in Billy's defense, in this episode, when he was sleeping in his car, they gave him stubble and they gave him a cute shirt. Like, he looked cute this week in ways that I don't normally see from Billy. Often they've had him look hot, right? Like with the abs and the water on the stomach, but he just looked adorable.
All right.
But not in Billy's defense was I thought he was mad at Brooke for having a miscarriage. And I think he went to go to talk to the doctor to find out what caused the miscarriage because he was blaming Brooke in his mind.
I don't know.
Also, bad doctor. Brooke clearly said she doesn't want you to talk to her husband about this.
There was no HIPAA yet. It's fine.
Anyway, that's my second point, Mary.
I don't see it, but I'm going to let it go. Because I feel like...
Hey, we can... Listen, this is the beauty of reading such rich text, is two people can read it and come to different conclusions. It's definitely, definitely why we should build government structures based on the Bible.
Oh, it's great.
Mary, I need a rest. I need to relax and recharge. And I need to review my notes to find a third point.
I just, you know what? This is it's a strange week because I was early for the only time ever. And I had an ad written. I feel like we Freaky Friday'd and like you've become me. I'm so sorry.
Oh, I do have the ad written.
All right.
So, okay. Well, let's come back in a few minutes. But first, a word from this week's sponsor.
This week's episode of the Melrose Placecast is generously supported by the following sponsor. Premiering this Sunday on Lifetime's TV Movie of the Week, it's Fugitive from a Bad Marriage, the Billy Campbell story. Billy's lucky to have survived growing up on the mean streets of suburban Los Angeles. He's outrun $1,000 in student loan debt. He's put so much blood, sweat, and tears into his writing career and learning to type on a keyboard like a real person. He's been left with the... But is he finally lucky in love when he lands the obscenely rich girl next door? Or has this dreamer wound up with a schemer? What will happen when he finally says enough is enough and runs off looking for comfort from his former fiance, who he literally tried to drag down the stairs last week? You'll scarcely guess where the story goes from there. Or, well, you probably actually will if you've ever seen any other Lifetime movie or an episode of Melrose Place. Starring Eric Roberts as Billy Campbell, Hayley Duff as his sultry minx of a wife, Brooke, and Melissa Joan Hart as his pouty former fiance, Allison. Fugitive from a bad marriage. He's on the lam from love.
Wow. Is this prime time?
Prime time.
What is the rating? I want to know if I can, if my child can watch it with me.
It's a mature, M-A.
M-A, what makes it mature? Now I want to know if my husband can watch it with me.
I'm ovulating.
That's pretty, God damn, that was so disgusting.
You're really upset by ovulation.
Do people think that's sexy? Like, oh
no,
oh, the eggs are sliding out. Get in there before they turn to menstruation.
The eggs are sliding out. If I were a more crass person, I would be sending you a text once a month, and I'd be like, well. Maybe I'll tell Gail. Maybe I'll plant an idea.
No, thank you. I will block her faster than I want to.
No, you won't.
Okay. So, fugitive from a bad marriage. Does he meet other fugitives from bad marriages?
I can't give too many spoilers about this because, the Lifetime people have spent a lot of money. You know, there's an advertising campaign. There's a lot. A lot has been sunk into this.
We're part of the advertising campaign.
That's true. We're part of the whisper campaign to get it on people's minds.
Oh, man. I can't wait to watch this show. Are there any, like, big explosions? Is there any instances of stalking? Are we throwing lily pads into a pool? Are there stolen babies? Like, tell me everything.
Oh my God, there's so much going on in the story of Billy Campbell. For starters, he went bungee jumping that one time.
Oh yes.
Yeah, and one time he drove a taxi cab. That's just a short little scene. It's really more focused on, you know, his married years and the years immediately preceding and perhaps after the marriage. It's in that. But, you know, like he did not to, I don't want to give too many spoilers. All right.
So, yeah,
like,
okay.
Tell the people at Lifetime.
It's just me and you now, Mary.
Okay. But, you know, Billy, there was some drama with his father-in-law, also known as Daddy.
Oh, God.
Who may have fallen off of a yacht. And so that could be a very dramatic scene that may or may not be included.
Yeah. Mary, we're not talking. We can't do that. They got to get that out of there.
They've got to get that out of there?
They got to cut that scene. They got to cut that scene.
Why?
They can't bring his old father. Wait. Which father-in-law? Are you talking about Allison's father?
Well, I mean, technically, that was only his hypothetical father-in-law.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was mistaken.
Kiss the cook.
Kiss the...
No, his daddy, his wife's daddy, may not have fallen off of a boat.
Wait, he may not have?
Well, I mean, you're going to have to watch the TV movie to find out.
Holy shit. Is this blowing the case wide open?
Sure.
Mary, is the disappearance and murder of Haley Armstrong somehow connected to any of our other podcasting colleagues?
Oh, I will say the disappearance and murder of Haley Armstrong does sound like the title of another Lifetime movie.
I love a good Lifetime movie. I do. Now, I don't watch them.
Well, you don't have to.
Yeah, because you know them all.
This one you should watch for sure.
But here's the thing with Lifetime movies. There was a period in the early 2000s when every Lifetime movie just had someone from Melrose Place. I don't make the laws. That's just how it was.
Yeah, they were available because the show had ended.
Yeah, and they were popular-ish.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, I feel like there were a lot of actors from the Spelling verse, if you will.
Spelling verse. That's a good way to think about it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm excited. I'm looking forward to this. I'm gonna set my VCR. But first I better clean my VCR.
You gotta clean those heads.
I gotta get some VCR cleaner, and then I'm gonna watch this mature show about Billy Campbell, fugitive from a bad marriage.
You gotta get what they call a head cleaning tape.
Yes, Mary, I know how to clean a VCR.
I believe you.
And we are back for this second half of season 4, episode 16 of the Melrose Place cast. We are discussing the episode that Mary lovingly refers to as Holy Strokes. I'm Tej.
I'm still Mary.
And Mary, you get to ring in this new year. January 1st, 2024 is finally here. Get us started. What?
I'm ovulating.
You already did this.
Whoops. No, I have another one. This therapy or whatever you call it, it's rather unorthodox, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'm going to try not to go into every... so long. Okay, so we last episode, again, Jane has overdosed on pills because Sydney put them in her champagne. We opened this episode on Sydney at the hospital chapel praying to God, don't let Jane die. Please just don't let her die. The doors dramatically open behind her. Sydney turns.
Oh my God. Kimberly looked hot.
Mm-hmm. It looks like something out of a Whitesnake video. It was ridiculous. She sits in the pew behind Sydney and is like, is there something you'd like to tell me? So eventually Sydney spills the beans. Yes, I put the things in her drink. I didn't mean for this bad thing to happen. I just wanted to knock her out so she'd be too passive for Michael. Kimberly's like, just leave everything to me. Doctor-patient confidentiality.
Yeah, not correct. Not a correct assessment of doctor-patient confidentiality.
Probably not. Sydney tells Kimberly, like, well, you should have told me the pills could cause a stroke. And Kimberly's like, well, they weren't supposed to be slipped in someone's drink. Sydney doesn't take responsibility for her actions. She has to accept what happened and learn from it. She goes to her drawer and asks Sydney how many pills she used. Sydney says three. Kimberly gets her three pills to put back in the bottle so that when Michael confronts her, and he will, he can just look at the bottle and all the pills will be there. And she thinks that'll kind of throw it off. And she says, you should be the perfect caregiver. Smother with warmth, compassion, and human kindness. Play it right, and you'll be the last one anyone suspects. And Sydney makes a face and goes, this therapy, or whatever you call it, it's rather unorthodox, isn't it? And Kimberly says, well, you're a rather unorthodox patient. Which would be last. Back at Michael and Peter's office, a fax comes in with Jane's toxicology results. There's a level of phenobarbital that should have knocked her senseless. And I guess it did because she had a coma and a stroke. Sydney comes in. Michael drags her into his office and demands to see her purse. He grabs a pill bottle and starts counting out the pills. He knew that Dr. Fruitcake had prescribed her those. Sydney plays it cool. She goes, I forgot I even had those. She's like, do you honestly think I could do that to Jane? And Michael says, yeah. She goes, God, I'm not Kimberly. Which also made me laugh. He counts out there are 30 pills, and he's confused. He's like, I don't get it. But, you know, Sydney says, I can focus on doing what I can for poor paraplegic Jane. Michael thinks she should stay away, but she says, I'm her only family in town. And besides, we need to start taking steps toward reconciliation. Michael suspects Kimberly is behind all this mumbo-jumbo. Sydney replies, it's never too late to heal emotional wounds. Okay. Michael is wheeling Jane back from physical therapy. They bump into Kimberly. And as you mentioned, he goes on a confrontation with Kimberly, accusing her of getting all this crap and giving Sydney the pills. Kimberly is not having it, due again to Dr. Patient confidentiality. And she tells him to go to hell. And they sort of bicker for a few minutes. She asks, how many lives can one man ruin? He still thinks they had something to do with it. And she's going to be back on the radio talking gibberish to the masses. She has a high threshold of tolerance for his bullshit, but he's pushing her to the edge. And they leave. Later, cut to Michael and Sydney wheeling Jane into the beach house.
Oh, her my goodness. Would you want to live there if you were Jane?
No. No. I mean, it's pretty. You got a view of the beach, but you're stuck in that house with no other people around. Sydney is not, like, she's trying to be good with this, but she's clearly not. Michael picks Jane out of her chair and kind of drops her on the couch and then lays on her. It was weird. Sydney takes him in the bedroom and says, like, how long is this going to go on? And he says, well, it's over as long as it takes. Sydney is back with Kimberly at another therapy session. She's like, this situation is a real problem. I did like you said, but now Michael's got Jane in our house. Kimberly's like, well, Jane had to go somewhere. She thinks that Jane suspects Joe and Richard for the drugging. Although, does Jane even know she's been drugged? That's never been made clear. Whatever, I guess she probably does. Sydney kind of blurts out, like, it would have been easier if she just died. And Kimberly goes, never, ever say that. And she says, you need to avoid this weakness at all costs. Violence and anger only beget more violence and anger. She's very Mother Teresa-ish.
Now, Kimberly did this while she got as close to Sydney's face as the blowtorch got when Kimberly was holding a blowtorch to Sydney's face.
Also, she got to Kimberly in like half of a second because she was fully seated at a desk and then she was immediately like in her face. It was very impressive. Sydney's like, I know I need more self-control. I just don't think clearly when my relationship with Michael is threatened. Kimberly says, we're going to get better. And she pats Sydney on the head and says, good girl, like she's a dog. Mm-hmm. There's a lot here. The number of times we have forced someone to move back in with Jane or Sydney or Michael, we should have been counting. There's so many times on this show this has happened. I wonder how long this will go on for before Jane can not be a paraplegic again, because I assume this.
She does get out of the wheelchair. But listen, I have to give the writers credit because there's a major story beat coming up where Jane and Sydney are friendly again. And I couldn't fathom how they got from Jane trying to pretend to want Michael to getting Jane and Sydney back together again. And this is how they're doing it. Like, the writers seem to be back in, what is that thing that some writers do? It's a Hollywood technique. They're writing.
They're doing something. Mm-hmm. They're doing something.
Well, listen, I have to agree, especially the way Jane is moving into the beach house, the way Michael dropped her on the couch and then like hovered over her. She doesn't really want you, but I suppose Michael thinks she does.
Michael, I think, thinks they all want him regardless.
Well, Jane said, it's been so long since I've been able to run my nails down your back, since I've been able to cut to the NFL saying, and he scores.
That's great writing.
All right. Can I tell you my final point of hire for the generations worthy of literary praise?
Yes, yes.
It can best be captured in a song by one Kadi Pari.
Okay.
Baby, you're firework. Baby, you're a firework. I was singing firework.
Oh, that song. Okay.
Firework.
Great.
Baby, you're a firework. Okay, here's what's happening. It's Amanda. It's Peter. It's Bobby Parisi. Why? This storyline, I would like to rescind all of my positive comments about the writers from a moment ago. And if that feels like whiplash, then that just means I could be on this fucking writing team. I refuse to believe that the good writers of Melrose Place had this in mind when they brought Jack Parisi on the show to begin with.
I don't think about that far ahead.
There's no way that when they're like, dude, we got Antonio Sabato Jr., here's what we're going to do. There's no way. I don't believe it. Anyway, whatever. Peter, Mary, you're not going to believe this. Peter is being sued for malpractice.
No.
And he's got to complain about it. Who better to complain about the unfair, unjust accusation of malpractice than his victim, Amanda Woodward? I can't believe these motherfuckers put that seed in there. Do they think we forgot?
Boy, I hope not.
I didn't, and I will not. I still know about Dr. Aviva Lester.
What was her thing? She had a head injury or she'd gone blind?
She was wrapped in bandages, full hair and makeup underneath the bandages, and she had amnesia. Remember, all of Shooters said, amnesia.
That's right. That's right.
Anyway, Amanda's getting pissed because Peter doesn't want to fuck her on his desk when he's getting sued for malpractice. And Peter Burns, who tried to take her appendix and nick an artery and was only saved by the moral decency of Michael Mancini, said to Amanda Woodward, who sued him, who had his medical license yanked, who had him sent to jail for his medical practicing, Peter said to her, "You don't understand. This type of case can ruin your reputation. Doctor, I'm sorry. I am sorry. But whatever. Listen. It gets better. Because Peter, because he's being sued for malpractice, needs to go out of town on New Year's Eve to avoid a deposition. Did you catch that?
Yeah. Who's having a deposition on New Year's Eve?
Listen. Amanda had to go to court against Chaz and Mommy on a Saturday that Allison was getting married. So,
I mean, but you're not going to find a court reporter or a stenographer on New Year's Eve that's just hanging around.
Listen, Bobby says, I know how to avoid the feds. So here's how to protect Peter from the fuzz. Stick around with Bobby Parizzi, who's established to be under constant FBI surveillance. Bobby Parizzi, who just moved to California, is renting a house but has a place in Palm Springs.
Yeah, that was convenient.
Yeah. Anyway, Bobby invites Amanda, and Amanda says, no, I shouldn't do that. And Bobby says, Peter might want to get away. And Amanda says, oh, that's probably not a bad idea. Allison walks in, and Amanda says, unless you had a date. That's not a date. That doesn't count. Peter's not going to be okay with this, and he shouldn't be. Because after Peter and Amanda have wild hot sex, because Peter's drunk, passed out on the bed. Now, I have to say, Peter, looking cute this week, in a way that he has not been. More on that later. Amanda comes in. Peter's laid out on the bed. She straddles him and says, don't even think about passing out on me. And then says, show me how big a man you can be. And I was like, oh, the innuendo is a bit much.
It wasn't even innuendo anymore.
The middle of the night, we see Amanda wake up. She sneaks away from Peter, who wakes up as soon as she closes the door. Again, writer's credit. They had at least made the door make a noise to wake Peter up. Normally, they just would have had Peter happen to wake up, too.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda goes outside, sees Bobby, and then sees fireworks, which means they all went to bed before midnight.
Well, unless they're like continue, you know, like sometimes people continue into the night with things.
Pacific time? No. Anyway, Bobby kisses Amanda with the fireworks going behind them. And that was the high art for the generations. That is artistic brilliance. The fireworks moment with literal fireworks. I don't think they executed it the best, but it was an attempt at high art for the generations. Now, this gets better for me as a gay, because later we see Peter in his office, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
Tight jeans. Light jeans. And this cute sweater that I don't know how to explain it other than like, it looked poofy, but not poofy at all. Like it looked like it had some thickness, but wasn't squishy. It worked so well. And it was like a very light tan, you know, almost like a dirty white. And it brought out the skin color of Peter's excessively tan face so well. His hair was great. His eyes were popping. Peter looks cuter than he ever had. Now, I know I've said that about Peter. I've said that about Billy. And also, Michael, when he dragged Cindy into his office to count her pills, wearing what appears to be an early attempt at a Henley, tight on him, like... These straight boys were looking fucking hot this week. I understand why Alan decided to stay in LA is all I'm saying. So that's my high art for the generations. A Bobby who did not look cute at any point, kissing Amanda with the fireworks going and the ominous Dr. Peter Burns watching from the shadows, who apparently never mentioned it to Amanda. They left Palm Springs together. She had no idea he was upset with her. until she called and left him a voicemail while he was wearing that cute, cute sweater with jeans. And he punches Bobby. Bobby says that's the worst mistake you've ever made. And Bobby cleared him out of the malpractice suit. So wrap that up with a bow.
Bobby has really bad hair.
Yeah. And bad lines and a bad character and bad judgment and a bad criminal record.
He's just like, there was a potential there. That could have been a really fascinating character, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think they wanted him to be, because he's sort of like, he's presented as sort of like, he's part of this like mobster family, but he's not like the rest. And he's more gentle and he's mm-hmm. not like his brother and he's nice to Amanda and he seems to genuinely care about her. But then he's just kind of like, meh. Like, I don't know. There's something missing. Like, there's some, I don't know. And I don't think the actor's doing a bad job. I think he's playing like what they gave him to play. Yeah. But it's a little undercooked or something.
It is. And it doesn't make sense that, well, the mobster dad gave up on trying to kill Amanda Woodward.
Right? Yeah. Odd. I'm going to let you have your point about Peter looking hot.
Yes. Did you notice?
I mean, I didn't notice to the level of detail that you, but he looked all right.
Let me tell you, normally it's Matt that I clock looking hot, right? Like I still, the blue jumpsuit when he's in prison, fantastic. But because it was so out of character for Peter and Michael and Billy to not look like rugged sexy, right? Which is usually what they try to go for. And that is usually not my vibe. They looked cute. They looked adorable. And I was like, you know what, Matt, let's get you out of the way first thing. That's why I had him as the first storyline. I'm done with him.
I will say, however, the whole thing with Peter getting sued for malpractice and ranting about how this will ruin his reputation. Like,
to Amanda!
This was my final trashy point.
Oh my God. But I blunted it.
The writers of this show, like, I'm sure they had turnover from season to season, you know. Mm-hmm. I know we've heard a lot about how fast they were making the show, how fast things were filmed. How could you possibly forget that storyline? Or someone on the writing staff, someone should have remembered that he did indeed try to, you know, drug her and kill her by taking her appendix out, and was, again, as you noted, subsequently sued for malpractice and, like, it's not disbarred when you lose your medical license, whatever the equivalent of that is. Mm-hmm. And he went to jail. Like, I get that we're doing a reformation, if you will, of Peter's character this season, that we've turned him from sort of like, he's not as much like the sultry, mysterious doctor as he is everyone's beleaguered father in certain scenes where he's like, God, what's going on here? Which mm-hmm. I love. But like that's a historical event that happened in the story of the show. Like this just, I'm like, we can't pretend. Can we? I mean, I don't know. It was a bridge too far for me. And I would have even had more license with it if it hadn't been Amanda he was complaining about it to. And yeah. Or if it was going to be Amanda, that they throw in a comment where she at least made a joke or a comment like, yeah, I remember you getting sued before or something yeah. funny. I don't know.
Yeah. Or like, why don't you just sleep with them to make it go away? Show them how big a man you can be.
Show them how big a man you can be. So, yeah, I had a hard time with that particular story point.
Listen, I have to give you that. It's very rare, as our listeners will now know, it's very rare for me to spoil the episode of Melrose Place when I know you haven't watched it. And I know that because we use the same password for our Paramount Plus. but this was one that was so absurd, so ridiculous, so unacceptable. I had to tell you. But again, they made up for it by making Peter look cute.
He did look pretty cute.
Yeah. And I think all Americans agree with us.
I think there was something for everybody in Peter looking cute. Regardless of which way you swing, you're probably
it. Yeah. Well, Mary, were there any other highlights you wanted to address? I have one.
Just three little ones. There's no Joe and Richard this week, which I was fine with.
That was my one.
Oh, yeah. But, like, lots of Matt, so I was happy for Matt. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed, I don't want to say I enjoyed the scene where Michael told Jane she had a stroke. I don't mean it that way. But I did like where he's testing if she can feel, and he's asking what she remembers from before she passed out. And she's like, I remember dancing, drinking too much, going upstairs. She goes, and she looks horrified. She goes, oh, Michael, tell me we did it. That really made me laugh. And then later, Jane is lying in her hospital room when Jake shows up with flowers. And she shows him a fashion sketch she drew that she's like, it took me hours and I can't sign my name, but it honestly didn't look that much worse than her sketches normally do. So I don't know.
Yeah. And no color, no color.
Yeah. Where are her Crayola markers?
This is just not the way. And also she was doing it to show Allison. Okay. As we've discussed, it's canon for the show. Allison dresses like Barbara Bush. So.
She kind of does.
Yeah. I love a season one flashback. You know, I love bringing it back. So.
Oh God. The people love it.
The people, they clamor for it.
My God.
My only high art point for the generation. I'm sorry. My only other note that I had was that Matt got more screen time than Joe and Richard. So.
I was happy for Matt.
Yeah. Well,
you know,
He could have looked cuter. Maybe he should have gone to jail. God, I hope he goes to jail. What?
That jumpsuit. He had that same color jumpsuit that Sydney had, that like navy blue. God, that's a good looking jumpsuit.
It's a good looking jumpsuit. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Everybody wins when they wear that jumpsuit.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, do you find yourself watching Melrose Place and thinking, wow, those straight bro doctors have killer style, but where in the world do they find those adorably cute shirts? Well, fret not, my friends, because we've got just the place for you. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba! Introducing, drum roll please, Melrose Sweater Central, where sexy bro doctors shop for their next date night outfit.
Hell yeah!
Ba-da-ba-ba-da!
I'm loving it.
Melrose Sweater Central is the hottest place, the hottest spot for the coolest threads, the drippiest fits, as the kids used to say. Because who says doctors can't have a killer sense of style? Because, Mary, let's be real. You can't save lives if your outfit is a flatlining disaster. Do you know what I mean?
Beep, beep, beep.
Now, at Melrose Sweater Central, we've got the latest in fluffy-ish sweaters and structured Henleys for the discerning bro doc who's got to save lives by day and slay hearts by night. You know what I mean by slay hearts. Yeah, Mary, that's right.
Get him.
Picture this. You're Peter Burns, inspired, slightly fluffy sweater because life is too short for tight shirts.
You don't want all that chafing.
Except for our Michael Mancini enthusiasts, where an early Henley is the way, an early Henley that just screams, I'm a doctor, but I'm also not afraid to show off my sexy waistline. Ba-da-ba-da-ba!
I love it.
Melrose Sweater Central, the only store where the dress code is as hot as the pool.
That wow. Doesn't make sense. Just feel that sizzle.
And remember, we've got sizes of every kind for Melrose Place fanatics, from Kimberly Shaw stands to the OG Jake Hansen lovers like Sandy.
Aw, sweet Sandy.
Because nothing says, I'm a confident, attractive doctor who only dates people from one single apartment complex, like a sweater from Melrose Sweater Central. Ba-da-ba-da-ba!
I love it.
Now, Mary, you know, I don't even have to tell you where to go to find Melrose Sweater Central.
You don't have to tell me, but you should tell the listeners.
Right there on the corner of Mulholland and Vine, but on the second, on the second story, right? So they built an upper deck to all the stores.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Development.
We're expanding. Melrose Sweater Central. Mary, we're bringing sexy back. One fluffy sweater at a time.
Speaking of bringing sexy back, what's the return policy?
There better not be bloodstains, so I'll tell you that.
No appendix operations in your sweater.
Visit us today on the corner of Mulholland and Vine. It's not far from the apartment building where everybody knows your name, your business, and probably your secret affairs too.
I'm loving it.
Ba-da-ba-da-da! And remember, listeners, at Melrose Sweater Central, we're not just selling clothes, we're selling a lifestyle. Because when you look good, you feel good. And when you feel good, you're ready to tackle the next soap opera-worthy plot that life throws your way.
Oh my God, it's always something.
Ba-da-ba-da-ba!
I'm loving it.
So wait, seriously, how long does this show go on? How many episodes are there?
Man, I told you this, right? So it goes to season 7 of the original run, but then there's the reboot season.
So there's how many reboot seasons?
Just the one so far.
So far.
Okay. But there's also, but then Mary, there's the Amazon has the true story of Melrose Place movie that we should cover.
Oh God, how long?
Yeah. And. Models Inc. has to be covered too.
Wait, what the hell is Models Inc.?
It's a 2-season spinoff.
Of what? What did they?
Of Melrose Place from the Lady from Dynasty was on it, I think.
Lady from Dynasty, my God, this was like a whole industry.
And I do think 90210 to understand where this show came from is probably worth exploring.
I don't know if I agree with that.
And then when Allison left, she went to Ally McBeal.
Does it have anything to do with the contents of Melrose Place?
I just feel like, how do you really want to be an expert in this or not?
I mean, I think you know the answer to that.
Okay, so we're in for all of it.
Oh, God.